City Council provides a half-hour general public comment session to hear from the public on city matters, except for any matter that are scheduled to have a public hearing. The City Council has a pilot program that welcomes Denver's youth to speak to general public comment on the first Monday of the month. Anyone can still sign up to speak. However, on these Mondays, these 18-year-old and under will be given preference. To maximize time for public comment, Council will not offer comments or responses from the dais. Council members or staff may contact speakers following their comment if they raise matters that lend themselves to follow-up. All speakers should begin by stating their name. Each person will have 3 minutes to speak. For those participating in person, when called upon, please come to the podium. A timer on the presentation monitor will display your remaining time. For those participating virtually, when called upon, please wait until you are promoted to speaker. Then accept the promotion, turn on your camera if you have one, and your microphone. You will see the timer on the screen counting down. Please refrain from profane or obscene speech, direct your comments to council as a whole, and refrain from individual personal attacks, including disparaging speakers' motives. First up, we have Noru Idris. Noru Idris in the council chambers. Next up, we have Christina Einstein. Christina. Next up, we have Kate McKenna.
Hello, City Council. Thank you for your time and attention. My name is Kate McKenna, and I'm the Executive Director for the newly formed Ballpark General Improvement District. I'm speaking today as a representative of 42 blocks worth of stakeholders in downtown Denver, which include the largest concentration of social service providers. I'm here for one reason, and that's to encourage you to continue to make an informed decision around the Safety Department's annual budget. The number one concern in our district is public safety around houselessness, and a vote to decrease or reallocate this line item in order to backfill the mayor's deficit is a vote against your constituents' well-being, housed or not. District 6 is the smallest geographical DPD service area, and it receives the second most 911 and 311 calls for service, approximately 395,000 to date for this year. Choosing to reallocate this budget while facing an average of 100 retiring officers a year, full well knowing that it could reduce our officer numbers below the authorized strength, is not only turning your back on the cries of the community, but it's a move that will result in the further deterioration of the business and residential framework that we, your community, are working so hard to maintain and restore. This is also the framework that provides tax generation and fills the general funds. Voting against public safety is actually you advocating for the success of the non-taxable, crime-based businesses here in Denver that prey on the unhoused community. Improvement districts are popping up all over the city because stakeholders are choosing to tax themselves above and beyond in order to do the work that the city budget should be funding. This includes houseless outreach, safety and security patrols, and general cleanliness. The improvement districts are intended to be above and beyond the city services and not a solution for the lack of funds or the misappropriation of them. The reality is that the class two low priority calls for service are now the ones that are destroying the hyperlocal economy, which is what's left now that we see that big business is failing downtown. While we agree in a multimodal recovery and housing strategy to assist in safety, we cannot forget that proactive policing is the answer, and without the funds to recruit, train, and maintain, this will never be actualized. We need you, our chosen decision makers, to get back to basics, to not only maintain the current safety budget, but to consider increasing funding to DPD so they can continue to prioritize recruitment as well as fund the 911 and 311 call centers. Call it in as a call to action only works when there's a presence and response, and that starts with you respecting the requests to increase and maintain the safety department's line item. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Jennifer Louth. Louth? L-O-U-T-H. Jennifer? Next up, we have Rana Abdelatif, A-D-A-B-D-E-L-L-A. Oh, perfect. Awesome. So how do you pronounce your last name?
Abdelatif.
Abdelatif. Okay, thank you.
All right. Hello, everyone. My name is Ron Abdelatif. I'm a student at CU Denver, and I organized yesterday's protest at the state capitol, where over 150 people gathered, including elected officials, to stand in solidarity with the people of Sudan. I'm here today to consider that call, to continue that call for action against the horrific violence in El Fasher and across Darfur, where civilians are being killed and horrible atrocities are occurring. The Rapid Support Forces, a paramilitary group armed by the United Arab Emirates, is responsible. My own grandmother and sister were shot at by the RSF militias while fleeing Omdurman. For our blood, precious resources like gold are being exploited illegally, enriching foreign interests while our people continue to die. Denver can act. I urge the council to pass a resolution calling for a U.S. arms embargo on the UAE and for the RSF to be designated a terrorist organization, and to direct the mayor to send letters to our Colorado senators and representatives urging federal actions. There is precedent at the federal level. Senators Jim Rich, Cory Booker, Chris Van Hollen, Ben Cardin, and Chris Coons, among others, have called for accountability, arms restrictions, and recognition of the atrocities in Darfur. Two federal bills are currently moving through Congress, H.R. 2059 and S-935, which aim to prohibit U.S. arms sales to the UAE until it stops supporting the RSF and to continue to increase accountability for human rights violations. These bills show that there is already momentum in Washington to restrict support to those fueling violence in Sudan. This is just the first step. We will take the message to Boulder and Aurora, building a statewide movement to pressure our senators and Congress. Every city and community can play a role in standing alongside Sudan. I prepared a short handout with contact information and requests, which will be emailed to the council after this meeting, and I welcome any council member or staff who want to discuss this further or collaborate with this large Sudanese community in Colorado to continue to reach out to me as well. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next up, we have Shadeen Salam, virtually. Nope. I'll just say your name one more time. Shadeen Salam. Next up, we have Wanda Morgan. Wanda? Oh, hi.
Hi, I'm here to talk on the Denver DayWorks program. The Denver DayWorks program is a supported employment program that provides low to no work barriers and opportunities for individuals experiencing homelessness through the city. It offers paid work experience while connecting participants to essential supportive services such as food, shelter, and other critical resources that promotes stability and long-term sufficiency. Since its launch in 2016, it's provided more than 1,200 participants to go through the program. My experience and observations in the program. I joined the Denver DayWorks in October 6th of this year, just this month, and have witnessed a remarkable transformation among my fellow participants. Our team performed groundkeeping duties at the tiny home communities and the homeless hotels throughout Denver. On our first day, confidence was low and the pride in one's work was nearly absent. Yet within weeks, attitudes shifted dramatically. Participants began to take ownership of their work sites. Every morning when we got into the van, they were excited to get there. They were excited and showed a lot of energy and excitement to get started on their day. Our field supervisor, Zach, recognized small accomplishments and celebrated progress. For many, this was the first job they've had in years, and showing up, learning, and earning a paycheck rekindled the purpose and hope in their hearts. We grew from individuals into a team, a real team, developing skills in teamwork, accountability, and pride, lessons that extended far beyond any job site. As a personal reflection, before this program, I was emerging from years of homelessness and hardship. Denver DayWorks gave me structure, belief, and encouragement that I desperately needed. Today, I'm sober, working, interviewing for jobs, and collaborating with housing advisors to secure some stable housing. For the first time in years, I feel a genuine hope. Why Denver DayWorks matters? It matters because it's a proven investment in reducing homelessness and restoring dignity. Employment builds stability. Hope reduces crime, addiction, and incarceration. This program changes lives, and it has definitely changed mine. As a closing thought, as you decide what programs to continue funding, please remember this. Ending homelessness doesn't begin with a bed in a shelter. It begins with belief in a person. And belief costs nothing compared to the value of human life that's been rebuilt. Denver DayWorks is not just a program, it's a bridge from despair to dignity. Please allow it to continue and be funded with deep gratitude, Wanda Morgan.
Thank you. Next up, we have Rebecca Norris.
Hello. My name is Becca Norris, and I'm here today speaking on behalf of the 2024 Bond Oversight Committee for Denver Public Schools. We're here to express serious concern about the delays to the construction of the Gateway E through 5 Elementary School, currently scheduled to open in fall 2028. We respectfully ask that the City and County of Denver expedite the remaining permitting and infrastructure approvals and work closely with the developer to get this project back on track. This school is critical in serving the Gateway community in far northeast Denver, the only part of the city where student enrollment is projected to grow over the next 5 years. Denver Public Schools purchased 17 acres near 51st and Telluride to build a new school, but nearly a year of permitting delays has stalled the start of infrastructure work, things like utilities, drainage, and roads that DPS cannot perform itself. If these approvals aren't finalized by April 2026, DPS will not be able to complete site work in time to open the school by the fall of 2028, as promised. This means hundreds of Denver students will have nowhere to go in their own neighborhood. What's at stake is the far northeast schools are already near or over capacity, even with Gateway E through 5 elementary schools are projected to be 92% full. Middle schools are expected to exceed 114% capacity by 2029. A delay could create a shortfall of more than 500 middle school seats within 5 years. There are major financial consequences as well. Each year of delay adds 3 to 5% of construction costs. That's over $3 million a year with no added value. If families leave DPS because there aren't enough classroom seats, the district could lose over $5 million every year in per pupil funding. In short, these delays are threatening student access, increasing taxpayer costs, and undermining the commitments of Denver Public Schools has made to the Gateway community and Denver as a whole. An email was sent to all of you with further details, and I do have additional copies of that with me tonight if anybody is interested in seeing that. And we urge the City Council and the Mayor's Office, the Department of Community Planning and Development, to prioritize this project and work in close coordination with the developer and DPS to resolve the remaining permitting issues. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Andrew Perez.
Hi, my name is Andrew Perez. I work for DayWorks. I have an opportunity to get a full-time position in Blackhawk as a security guard. And I really thank these guys, Frank and everybody from ServiceSource, that actually gave me an opportunity to succeed in my life. And we need more fundage if we can get people to help us so we can thrive and do more for the community. I'm just grateful to speak today. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Next up, we have William Atchison. William? All right, I have to put him at the bottom. I don't go back. And then Tony Frey, virtually. Tony, if you'll accept the promotion.
See, how are you? Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Perfect, thank you. First of all, thank you for coordinating this public comment. I've enjoyed being a part of having a place in my R&O in the West Colfax Association of Neighbors. I'd also like to thank in addition to Councilwoman Jamie Torres for being such a fantastic councilwoman herself. She listens to us, and we're very, very grateful for her and her efforts as it relates to safety, which is the topic that I'll talk about. It's one that has a lot of focus in our neighborhood in West Colfax, to the extent that within each of our interest groups across mobility and land use and others within our mobile text group, which has about 250 individuals within the neighborhood, safety comes up as three times the engagement as any other interest. So it's one that's a hot topic. Not only that, it's quite visible some of the amounts of things that we see that make us feel unsafe. For example, bus shelters, alleys, public drug use, things that right now is a concern, and any staffing that may be inhibited or not within the 2026 policing budget could have a way of impacting that. I had just received an email that we are projected to be by the end of 2025 at 98% staff capacity for the police. It certainly doesn't feel like we're anywhere close to that. When I call the police, which is several times a week, complaining about roughly the same things, asking for help, seeing visible drug use, drug deals in the same places all the time, and 98% does not feel like we're anywhere close to. In addition, I'd be remiss if I didn't also vouch for STAR and other services that help individuals who are willing to provide for services in order to improve their situations with addiction services and so forth. So in summary, I'd sent everybody on the council a letter from our safety committee, which voted to advocate for the police, advocate for proper replenishment to the extent that we need more policing in our communities, including West Colfax. And I appreciate you all for listening to me this evening. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next up, we have Elliot Howe.
Alrighty. Hello. This is the speech I was going to give last week. Content warning: current goings on in U.S.-funded Israeli torture prisons. Did you know that the city of Boulder has $38 million invested in Israeli apartheid? Do you know how much our city, Denver, has invested in apartheid? You must disclose and divest. We know what companies are actively invested in and profiting from Israeli apartheid, from Francesca Albanese's UN special report, From Occupation Economy to Economy of Genocide. We need to cut the umbilical cord between Israel and USA, starting by divesting from complicit companies, included but not limited to Chevron, Intel, Palantir, HP, Airbnb, BlackRock, Caterpillar, Hyundai, Microsoft, and Amazon, all of whom are funding Israeli apartheid and genocide. There are some who lie and say that the genocide is over. To those people, we clarify our demands: divest from apartheid, including divesting from the UAE, who is committing genocide in Sudan. This includes Israeli genocidal apartheid. Israel is currently holding over 9,000 Palestinian hostages, people abducted off the streets, held without trial, and in many cases without charge. The hostages include women and children, and these prisons are notorious for torture and sexual assault. In the past year, we've seen video from one of these torture prisons in which Israeli guards surround a prisoner and repeatedly insert an object into them. Despite this video being shared all around the world, these soldiers and this rogue state have faced no consequences. By now, we know the names of the individuals directly involved in the killing of Hind Rajab, including a U.S. Navy SEAL, Sean Glass. We need to hold these murderers accountable. By now, we have heard the testimonies from released Palestinian hostages who testify that Israeli guards trained dogs to rape them. And if you're someone who feels worse for the dogs than the humans, you need to really think about yourself. We've heard from released female hostages that Israeli guards come in and rape them, while more Israelis on the outside of the prison make as much noise as possible to drown out the screams of the women. More than a year ago, we saw footage of Israeli officials discussing whether or not it is okay to rape Palestinian hostages, and they said it was. Around that same time, we saw mobs of Israelis break into their own prison to release the 9 Israeli rapists who were charged with rape. Later, these self-proclaimed rapists had speaking tours on Israeli television. If you're not already convinced that this group is a terrorist group, know this. Israel has literally been building tunnels under the compound of Al-Aqsa Mosque and under holy Christian sites in East Jerusalem as well. They are attacking the West Bank as we speak. The part of Palestine Bethlehem is in. I call on all who call themselves Christians to do all in your power to divest from Israeli apartheid. You are funding rape, torture, kidnapping, tunneling, bombing, and mass starvation. I now know that my and your ancestors, those of you who share ancestry with me, did much the same thing when they stole the land we stand on from the indigenous nations of Turtle Island. But we have to do better than our ancestors for the future of the earth, humanity, and our eternal souls. We are the ones funding apartheid and genocide around the world. If we own, Denver owns investments in Hyundai, in all the companies I listed, you are paying the war machine to keep going. Remember to boycott Chevron because they are literally the oil in the war machine. We need to get out of this dirty money and stop investing in apartheid. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Jesse Paris.
The council, those watching at home, those in the council chambers, My name is Jesse LaShawn Parrish, and I represent for Black Star Action Movement for Self-Defense, Positive Action Commitment for Social Change, as well as Unity Party of Colorado, the Northeast Denver Residents Council, Frontline Black News, Baca's Black Experience Enhanced, and I reside at the Legacy Lofts in Darrell Watson's district of District 9. We still have apartheid going on in this country. Nothing has changed except the year. Still have genocide going on in this country. Nothing has changed except the year. Nobody speaks about foundational Black Americans, our slavery freedmen built this country. But yet y'all want us to go out and vote for us. We're not getting nothing tangible. Nothing is gonna be us, but yet the Democrats, same ones that's telling us to go out and vote. Why should we go out and vote if we're not gonna get nothing tangible for our vote? It's called quid pro quo. If I give you my vote, I want something in return. But when it comes to Black people, y'all just think that we're just gonna vote for you just to be voting for you. Those days are over. The malign neglect has to end. The malign neglect policy that was implemented under the Nixon administration has to end. That's what you lump us in the broad ambiguous terms such as people, color, minorities, underserved, underprivileged, underrepresented, downtrodden, distressed, vulnerable. None of that terminology has helped foundational Black Americans. It has hindered our progress as a group. You'll hear the current order and the rest of City Council, because I'm going to address you as a whole, even though you didn't stop that previous speaker, Tony Fry. You didn't say nothing about him addressing the council as a whole. So I already know how you get down. The council as a whole, y'all not going to do nothing to stop this malign neglect policy. Y'all just going to keep implementing it. You're going to keep prioritizing illegal immigrants over actual citizens. Y'all didn't care when it was Black families, women and children out on the street. Now that y'all caused this crisis, that Biden administration caused, bringing in 50,000 illegal immigrants, now the city has to foot the bill and the citizens get neglected as usual, especially the Black ones. But yet y'all still want us to go out and vote. For what? Didn't you learn from 2024? We're done voting blue no matter who. If you're not gonna do nothing tangible for us, we're just gonna sit it out. So I hope there's a low voter turnout tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you. Majors?
Just 1 second, it's an echo, 1 second. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Is there still an echo?
No, we can hear you just fine.
All right, thank you, City Council. Well, I'd have to say, what an immense failure and a disappointment of a council as a whole. Lord knows how I feel about the police. I mean, it's ugly how I feel about the police. I mean, really ugly. But I feel about the murdering, lying, profiling, abusive, racist police is like serious. Except for the chief and the sheriff, they're the only ones that have an exception. You know, defunding the police by $9 million. No choppers, no supplies, no recruits, and yet you expect them to, perform and provide mediocre, subpar safety like they've been doing. $9 million for illegal aliens that the city council continues to cater to for somebody, okay, for city continue. Illegal immigrant families, you pander for all of this. We're in a $200 million deficit or something like that, where Black Denverites, actual citizens, have to beg and plead to get anything. This is anti-Black racism in housing in all 9 areas of human activity. And all too in the middle of a shutdown that you all caused for illegal immigrants, right? Housing them, giving them Medicaid, food stamps, all the goodies that we got to beg and plead for. You gave it to them, and you hit them all over the city. You subjected yourselves to the mayor and the will. Now you're defunding the police, which is kind of exciting, but then at the same time, I pray that none of you actually need them. Because as mediocre as they have been, you're going to have to wait for 911 like everybody else. And they may not come to protect you and your property, right? They may not come. This is like an epic failure. And if anything passes, it'll be because Paul Lopez made it happen. Nothing should pass. Nothing on that ballot should pass. You will see the will of the people actually say no. There's nothing tangible about anything that you want us to vote for. It's over with. There's nothing there. The will of the people will say something. There'll be a low turnout rate, no all across the board. And then when it's come time to play political musical chairs, all of you will have to go. That's the will of the people. Thank you. Have a good night.
You got it.
Thank you. Next up, we have Roderick Marshall.
Good evening. My name is Roderick Marshall, CEO Fresh Start Denver, and board member at Sewell, board member at Soar Elementary School in Green Valley Ranch. And as often, my goal is to promote positive vibes and positive energy. And I noticed that when I was younger, I got into crime without the situations that our nation is facing today. So I can only imagine the crime rate, the spike that we're about to see in the crime rate due to people, ordinary citizens, needing to eat and cutting the food stamp SNAP benefits from 42 million families is just outrageous. I never in my life heard of such a thing. The federal government, we pay our taxes, and that usually is a place where if you need help, you can get help. You didn't used to have to question whether or not the federal government would be there to help its own citizens, its own taxpayers. So my concern is the crime rate that I just feel like is going to spike in the Denver area. And as always, I extend my personal services and my own experience as a convicted felon who has a pardon from the state board of pardons and paroles in Atlanta, Georgia. So I know what it takes to, I know how easy it is to fail yourself and find yourself in a place that you ordinarily wouldn't be in. So I'm concerned that a lot of citizens would be there. And I also know what it takes to get out of that trap and to get yourself back on track. And like I said, I have a full pardon and I've worked with countless youth, countless adults, in the juvenile system as well as the prison system. And I want to make sure that council as a whole know that I'm here. So any district that has those opportunities to work with individuals facing those situations or issues or coming away from those situations and issues, please consider me. And as always, as a graduate of the Excel Center, I would like to ask y'all to take a little time to visit. It is a beautiful place where adults are going back to school to earn their high school diploma, as I did. And thank y'all for being there and being of service. I appreciate your hard work. And it's hard to lead. It's not easy, especially these days with so many distractions and a lot of unnecessary uncertainties. So continue to lead, continue to be there for your constituents. And thank you all. And I hope you have a beautiful night. And thank you.
And our last speaker for the night will be Norris Iris. Idris.
Good evening. My name is Nora Dries. I've lived here practically my whole life. Growing up, I spent summers in Washington Park. I would start every new year on 16th Street Mall, counting down to the new year and looking on with hope for the future, surrounded by the warmth of my family against the cold December air. At that same time, I would demonstrate for Sudan on the Capitol steps just across the street, time and time again since I was 10 years old. I'm 18 now, and I'm still protesting. The reason why is because despite everything that's been happening, despite the last 8 years, people keep glancing over at a devastating situation, and all I've been begging for is change. Sometimes people call the conflict in Sudan the forgotten war, but it's not forgotten, it's ignored. The silence about what's been happening only allows for more pain to occur. Since the start of the war, millions of people have been displaced internally and across neighboring countries. Millions are suffering from famine. The death toll is estimated to be over 150,000. And within the past week, El Fasher, a city that's been besieged, has finally fell to the rapid support forces, who have massacred over 2,000 people in just a couple of days. This is a tragedy, and that's something that only we know. I mean, the number could be so much higher. Now, I ask yourself to put yourselves in their place. Imagine you've been starving for weeks and you decide to get flour to feed your family. You'll be killed for trying to feed them. Imagine your mother cradling your children. You'll be hung with them. Imagine they're hung by your arms, tortured to death. And the only reason anybody knows is because your killers felt proud enough to post that on the internet. Imagine your blood staining the earth and being seen from satellites, from outer space. You won't have to try hard because this isn't hypothetical. It's reality. It's been happening in El Fasher and across Sudan for the last 3 years. This isn't something that's in our imagination. This is real life. And this isn't a Muslim or African issue. It matters as a human issue, as a Denver issue that affects thousands of Denverites. That's why I'm here pleading with you all on behalf of those who can't, pleading with you to pass a resolution demanding the U.S. have an arms embargo against the United Arab Emirates, who are funding the weapons that the RSF is using as one of many actors in this proxy war. The blood of El Fasher is on their hands, and our taxpaying dollars shouldn't be funding or providing anything to them. We're asking that the RSF be labeled a terrorist organization. We're asking you as a council and to go ask the mayor to advocate for us by sending letters to our Congress members. Lastly, we want to make sure that we review and cut any city investments tied to anybody fueling the war, because human lives matter, regardless if they're in Denver or in Darfur. Don't let Sudan and its people be ignored. Sudan, its people, your people, our people. It shouldn't be ignored. And I'm tired of having a new tragedy to protest. I'm tired of 8 years of hope turning into dread. Dread that Sudan would still be ignored even if we protested for 100 years. I want to go into next year feeling hope, counting down and making a prayer at midnight for something other than peace, for an end of loss and death, for everything to finally end. But that can only happen if we're all a part of it. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes our general public comment session. If we did not get to you today,